You're listening to the CBA podcast, where we talk everything basketball, from club to AU to high school to college. CBA podcast is brought to you by Chapman Basketball Academy. Your hosts for the podcast are Terry Massey, Max Johansson, and Joe Chapman. All right, here we go. Third one. Today's podcast is probably going to be one of the more important ones that we do. Had a lot of good guests in the past, Steve, Travis, Craig, you know, the referees, multi-sport. This one here is going to be pretty special. Today our guest is Brittany Herrick. She is a certified mental performance consultant. Welcome.
Thank you. No pressure at all after that intro.
I think that was the best intro you gave.
Right.
That was good.
Well, no, I just took a screenshot of what Joe sent me and then with all the information. So,
So my email signature is good then.
It's very good. Why don't we start by just saying what it is that you do and your background and how you got into it?
Sure. So, in addition to being a certified mental performance consultant, I'm a sports psych. So my doctorate is in sport performance, sports psychology and performance, And I work with individuals and groups predominantly in the athletic space just to address mental skills, develop those skills, improve the mindset. And of course, the goal is to optimize performance. And I do that through mental training.
And what made you get into that? You know, because we're going to dive in. Like you're a player, you're a basketball player. You dealt with a lot of adversity yourself with, you know, bouncing back from, you know, three ACLs, injuries.
Yep.
And you're a really good player. Went on and you got, you played at Oshkosh, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you were really good there and you got a chance to play overseas as well. So just talk about how you got into this space that you're in now and how did it, you know, kind of mold you, because we're all into something, you know, and how did that, all your life lessons and things that you had to deal with adversity help you get into the space that you're in now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I got into the space now because I got into coaching. And I always reference the circus family, but I take a really wonky approach to how I got to where I was. So there's a short story basically is once I came back from playing professionally, it was kind of like, what do I do? And I was an English major and I didn't want to teach. So parents were thrilled. so I was like, what do I want to do with my life? And I'd always fallen into coaching, like as a basketball player,
right,
constantly doing camps and all of that. And I went, okay, let's do this. So I coached AAU. I coached at the high school level, freshman and JV. And I went, yeah, I really like this. And I loved working with the kids and, I kind of went, oh, yeah, this is a career for some people. So I really started pursuing coaching. So I was at Whitewater for a year. I was at Concordia University, Wisconsin for, I don't know, 4 or 5. The math gets wonky when you get my age. and then my last place I coached was at UW Stout. And just a culmination of things. And we can definitely dive into some of that. But kind of as I'm sitting there going, you know what, we're our kids. And I call my players my kids because that's how I feel about them. But we're missing things, not just when they're coming and going, coach, I have a paper due and I don't know when's your paper due? Tomorrow. Okay, let's, you know, and so there's some of those kind of almost like life skill things. And I'm going, why are we giving this to our kids? Like, how can we help them? And then from that performance side, and I could just see they're struggling with some of the pressure maybe that we as coaches are putting on them or they're seeing. The WIAC is a really strong conference.
Yes, it is.
There's a lot of pressure there. I just went, we're not doing things that we could be doing to help them, and they're not getting that from somewhere else, and that's not necessarily anyone's fault. So I want to help these kids in a better way, and I kind of went, I don't think coaching is for me, because I treasured the moments when they are kind of rushing in.
Right.
Coach, I got to do something. Or it's like, hey, coach, I've got, you know, an hour to kill. Let's chat. And I was like, yes, let's do this. So I decided I'm going to go get my doctorate, and I thought that the best way to do, like, to help them was to create these initiatives in the university as an athletic director. And then as I was in my program, there's this whole clinical side. And I went, this is cool. I mean, I get to work directly with athletes. I get to work with teams. I get to work with coaches. And for me, the other piece, too, was how can I help coaches be better coaches? Whether it's just kind of people trying to transition from what that, you know, old school kind of mentality was to even just how do we better help these kids today? Because they are different.
Yes.
And not in a negative way. They're literally neurologically different because we have this really cool screen in front of us all the time now. so that's really how I got into it. And I honestly started my own my own practice, just because when I finished school, the lockdowns happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody's hiring in sports. Sports didn't exist for a while. So I went, well, as long as I'm here, I might as well
right.
do this. And this is a great area for, in youth yeah. sports in particular. Youth sports is truly where my heart is. I've worked with older athletes and I've worked with non-athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I love working with the youth because I think mm-hmm. they're fun. They're challenging, but they're fun.
Yeah. And that's how we got introduced, you know, and, yep. and I think that's how our bridge crossed during that COVID year, 2019, 2020. A lot of our athletes were struggling mentally, being locked down for that long, not having things to do, that the cycle of doing everything every day was gone, you know. So for a lot of people who are one percenters, who mm-hmm. the gym is kind of your definition of who you are, you take that away from you. Now you got to start answering real questions, yes. you know. So a lot of us don't have to answer those questions. Like, you know, when you're retired, you start answering those questions. When I retired, I start answering questions. Now, some of these kids are stuck for 9-10 months answering questions about, are we going to get back to normal? And am mm-hmm. I going to play in college? And we see the effects of that now with the fifth year and the transfer portal, what that did to that COVID. The COVID kids is what I call them.
Unfortunately, that's yeah. their nickname, right?
It's the COVID kids, you know. So, and I think the 24 class is the last of the COVID kids, or the 25 class.
This one.
This is the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the last that's like, you know, they missed homecoming. They missed some proms. Mm-hmm. They missed, you know, they had to wear masks while they were playing. So that was our introduction to you.
You were in my first groups I ever worked with. Yeah.
And we needed that. There was so much positive stuff that came out of, you know, our Zoom meetings that we did and, mm-hmm. you know, doing cool stuff that we're going to talk about. But just to see the kids kind of open up and talk about different struggles that they had, and for you to be kind enough to answer questions and to meet with people and talk to them as a former athlete, you know, that's the stuff we wish we had. You know,
gosh, I would have loved a sports psych. Right, oh, I would have right. loved it.
But it was such a taboo, you know, 20, 25 years ago, like, you know, well, 10 years ago. I mean, mm-hmm, it's yeah. just something that wasn't talked about, or, you know, it was so much frowned upon that if you had someone you trusted and to talk to about your issues or things that you're just going on to, or just to talk about your day, it would go a long way of helping, especially the kids and players that retire. Mm-hmm. About what's next, because we all deal with, like, oh boy, what's next? I always refer to it like, what is it called? PTSD mm-hmm. For athletes. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's not that extreme, but for a lot of us that picked up a ball at 9 and now you're done, even if it's 18 or I was 32, 31 at the time, it's still a transition that you back into the real world. And that's a struggle for a lot of people when you put that much time into it and now it's over.
I mean, it's your identity.
It's your identity.
Right? And we don't talk about like that whole like holistic development of, yes, you're an athlete, but you're also these other things. And sometimes right. that's the external, and sometimes that's, you know, that was me as a kid too. I was like, I'm a basketball player. This is right. what I do.
right.
So yeah, whenever that ends, it's always challenging, whether yeah. you end on a high or a low for your career, it's hard.
Right. And I want to talk about the three injuries that you hit.
Yes.
And I want to talk about how you had to overcome your hurdles of all three of them and still become a hell of a college player and a professional player, because that's not easy to do. I've tore my Achilles. I tore my ACL. So I know the pressures of bouncing back and to perform still at a high level. Mm-hmm. But talk about that journey for you and what that's done for your career.
Sure. I'm sitting there going, gosh, when was that? My first one was when I was 13. It was like the end of seventh grade. I vividly remember when that happened. And it was kind of lucky. Now, granted, I'm old, so AAU was just kind of starting.
Mm-hmm.
So I just missed like an AAU season. And again, the recruiting landscape and all that, very different back right. in the Stone Age. And then I tore my ACL again the end of my eighth grade going into high school. So I missed my freshman year of high school basketball, and I missed my senior year. And that freshman year and senior year, obviously, like, that was, I mean, for me, it was devastating because, again, mm-hmm. I still am, but like, I identified as an athlete. That mm-hmm. was my main thing. And I think what was really hard for me, because when I had my goals, I was like, I'm playing Division I, I'm doing this and all these things. And at that time, you know, perspective now, but at that time it was really hard because those D1 schools were not interested in me, which I understand. It is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple that were still you know, still there. And I was like, sweet, this is great. And then senior year's gone. You're like, oh, man, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? And my parents were amazing through all of them. Of course, my mom, you know, was a little more emotional than my dad, but my dad, and I don't know why it was so impactful. I think because for him, my mom played sports and she'll be like, I never got the opportunity to be an athlete, but my dad was an athlete. Like, he got drafted by the Browns. So like, he's was kind of in that. And he goes, listen, if you want to quit basketball and just go to school, he's like, that's okay. And that was important.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, oh no, like clearly we need to have a conversation. I'm like, no, I'm playing. Yeah. And so at that point I was like, okay, what's realistic? So, you know, what's challenging is when you have those injuries at any of those times. And of course my experience is, you know, going to be different, but in all of those times, what was hard is not only am I not playing basketball, but that's where my social group was.
Correct. Right.
So I'm not seeing those, especially in the summer. I'm not seeing them as much because they're, you know, out doing AAU, they're traveling, they're doing those things. And, you know, the other piece to that was they kind of forget that you can't do these things.
Right.
And in my close friend group, basketball was my everything. Where for them, they're like, it's just this thing that we do. So it was also really hard to find someone. No, I don't think you understand.
This is it.
I do. Why do you not? So that was really challenging. I'll be honest, for me, especially my senior year, again, it was the hardest one. For me, it was I really got into my faith and started kind of going through that journey. And I think that was really impactful. And at that time too, gosh, my senior year, I think we had 6 total girls in our basketball program tear their ACL. So wow. We were ramping up for this really amazing heavy senior team. Yeah. I went to Xavier, so who runner-ups at state this year.
Great job.
But, you know, so that was in some ways maybe gave me something to do because able to, hey, my teammates and I, we're all doing rehab, unfortunately, on the sidelines. And I had really supportive coaching staff that was like, we want you to be involved. We want you to come to practice. And again, for me, I went, that's... obviously I'm coming to practice. To me, that just wasn't an option because I was kind of, what am I going to do? Yeah. We didn't have YouTube and TikTok and all these things or Netflix even for me to, you know, what am I going to do? So I thought that was cool. And my parents, you know, all through that were really supportive. Like my mom would still come to games. My dad made sure he came to senior night. So I think that I was really fortunate too, where I had that good like family support system at that time. And again, I'm just really blessed that I was able to go play for a really strong program.
Yeah. Let's talk about Oshkosh.
Sure.
Yeah. Cause that was a great landing spot after all that happened to you.
Yeah.
I mean, Oshkosh was a great landing spot and you were all American there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's okay. That's the hard part for all of us is like every athlete we had on here, they don't want to talk about themselves. You know, it's like, it's more so like you did so much cool stuff, you know, that the normal player would never get a chance to do. You know, 90% of all these players won't get a chance to experience playing professionally, being an All-American. I mean, that's just something that's not normal, you know. So talk about your experience there.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I loved it. I just loved it. My closest friends were from there because, again, it's not just like your high school season where, yeah, maybe we show up. I know it's a little bit more serious now, but we're not just showing up for somewhere. Like, we are showing up. We are doing this. These are expectations. And my freshman year was challenging because I'm coming from not playing for a year.
Right.
And there was no fear. Like, I'm like, I'm doing this. It's fine. No big deal. But just going, oh, yeah, like my timing was a little off. Like, for me, I'll be honest, it was really frustrating because I have really good hands. And it took a minute for me to not just get back to it, but again, high school to college, that's a little different.
It is.
And I obviously I didn't realize it until like later reflecting, oh yeah, that made it more challenging. So I did struggle and I was like, gosh, do I want to transfer? What's going on here? And I'll be honest, I think I got knocked down a peg or two because I was cocky. And it was like, I'm not getting minutes. Why is this person playing over me? I know I'm better. And I'm glad I didn't transfer. You know, my coaches, you know, they sat down and talked with me and they're like, hey, if you want to go talk to a school, go talk. Like back then we had to get permission and things like that.
Right,
even
right.
At, you know, the D3 level. And so they were cool about it. They weren't going, well, why would you want to do that? Like, we don't want you doing this. So I think that maybe it was reverse psychology.
Yeah.
but I did have a good support system there and I just had fun. I mean, I won't say every year because I'm not going to lie to y'all, but you know, we had a couple years of like incredible team chemistry, and I'm not going to say we were all friends off the court, right? But when we were like, we're showing up to practice, we're taking care of business, and it is okay if we're not all hanging out afterwards. One, because we hang out enough,
right?
With all the other stuff that we do. And so it was just, it was fun. And I played with, I call her Miss Universe, but she was like a Justin's player of the year and things like that. And I'm, you know, and now they're all doing amazing things. So, you know, I look back going, I was meant to go here. I was meant to meet these women because they are forces in the world now. And there's always that, oh man, if I would have gone D1, what would that been like? I wouldn't have met these people.
Right.
And
right.
It's hard. Like even now, sometimes you're like, it's hard, especially, you know, NCAA tournament time. I'm like, yeah, this is great. Let's go. And
hey man, you're looking at the screen.
I know. I was like, the game's on. Let me see what's happening. So it's like, I still get that feeling like, oh yeah, I'm going, dude, you don't play anymore. You're not fit to like carry these ladies' water bottles. Just like sit down and watch on the TV. But yeah, it was a great time. And I have teammates that can tell you stats and be like, yeah, this is where it was in the game. 2 minutes left. I'm going, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you for the life of me. I remember a couple big wins that we had, but truly at the end of the day, and it's cheesy, and sports is cheesy because it's true a lot of times, my teammates and just those experiences were amazing. And even the crummy workouts,
right,
and even the road trips that went horribly wrong, and, you know, were fun.
Yeah.
And now it's like, it was great
because that's what you remember, you know. All of us, that's what we miss the most, is being a part of a group, the camaraderie. Something bigger than yourself, you know. The wins and losses and championships and, you know, individual accolades, they all get fuzzy as you get older. They all get made up of fish stories, and, you know, average 20 when it was really 8. But all that stuff happens. But the relationships and friendships and the people you meet on and off the court is why I always say I think people are meant to go where they're meant to be. You know, and it all makes sense. You probably want to go this and there, but God put you here.
Yes.
And it's for a reason. You know, and I always say that to every kid that's going down that path of what me and Max are going through, the recruiting battle with all these kids, like, oh, I want to be here and there. And it's like, no, this is your spot. You know, this coach really likes you as a person.
Yes.
That team has got 3-4 year players that's going to be there. It's not a lot of transfer portal kids. You know, you want to take your kids where they're going to be successful, you know, and I think that's a huge part of the growth.
Yeah. And I think what you mentioned was you got knocked down a couple of pegs, and like going through high school, you were thinking Division One and ended up at Oshkosh, probably due to more injuries rather than play. But could you touch on just the level, the skill level of the WEAC, the Oshkosh school, and even remember your like tournament runs potentially of playing other high level Division III programs, and just how high of a level that is?
Gosh, it's so good. I think, you know, in D1, you tend to have kind of the coasts that are really, really strong. In D3, it is the Midwest schools.
And 100%.
You get a couple out there every now and then, but it's really the Midwest. And, you know, the WEAC, all you got to do is kind of look at what they're doing in the NCAA tournament. And obviously the landscape is very different now, but back in the day, you know, it was like, okay, if we're not going to a D1 in Wisconsin, do you want to leave? No. And so some schools, I don't want to say got lucky, but kind of got lucky. And they're getting D1 caliber, D2 caliber athletes.
Absolutely.
Because they're, you know, local, and not because, and I don't mean that again in a negative way, but there's strong schools and you have strong competition. It's not like you're in a conference where it's two teams dominating the entire time and everyone else kind of gets thunderwhumped. Right. And then, you know, obviously you're playing the game of, okay, we have to get the rankings and make sure we're looking, putting together a good resume for the tournament. So we played the top teams in the country. I mean, we were in the, I don't know if it was every year, but we were typically in the top 25. We did get like a number one once, then we got our butts handed to us.
That happens.
It happened. We probably deserved it again.
Yeah.
Knocked down a peg.
Right.
But it was physical. And I remember kind of with this D3 thing, when I went in there thinking, I'm really a forward, you know, I'm physical, I'm strong, part of that due to the ACLs previously, because I started strength training much earlier than most people my age at that time. And it's physical. I'm going against girls that are 6'4", 6'5", and you're like, oh, right. And so, too, having to adapt and this is how I have to improve my skill. You have to get creative too. It's not like, oh shoot, this chick 6'5" and blocks my shot every time. Right. Well, what are you going to do about it? Right. Yeah. I was like, I mean, you know, sit in your dirty diaper, or are you going to change it? Is kind right. of how I, like, I phrase it all the time. And I do think we got some really good transfers that were at D1s and D2s and didn't like it for whatever reason. So they came, and again, really blessed again to play with just good athletes. Yeah. And I think it's even more obvious now, the WEAC's only getting better. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy that our conference gets some more bids in the NCAA tournament, because back then it was like one team.
Yep.
They didn't like us. So it's really cool just to see how the game has grown and the talents, really, the parity in that conference mm-hmm. is good. I mean, it's crazy how good it's gotten.
Yeah, talk about the girls game a little bit, of what you've seen from the last 20 years of the girls game, of how popular it is now, and also the skill level and coaching of like,
honestly,
stars.
It's stupid. It's just, yeah. I mean, one, I do miss my traditional post players, although every now and then you get those coming back, but
yeah.
it's so much faster pace and it's so much more physical. And I think people are starting to understand that basketball in general is a physical game, but
yes.
girls basketball, women's basketball is physical.
Yes.
And I actually recall my first time ever knowing that this college women's basketball thing existed. It was 1995. Mm-hmm. I remember at my grandma's house, it was Easter, and it was UConn, Tennessee, Stanford, Old Dominion. And mm-hmm. that was UConn's 35-0 run. And so Rebecca Lobo fan for life.
Yep.
And I always, if I'm working with the kid and I'm like, and they're basketball player, I'm like, please check out Rebecca Lobo. So I just was like, I couldn't get enough of watching it, and it was hard. And then you had the 96 Olympics, and then the WNBA started. And so mm-hmm. that was like my trick to get out of chores. Dad, there's a WNBA game on. Can I watch it? And my dad was great. He's like, yeah, go ahead. He's like, I still had to do the chores, but I got postponed. And I still, it's like you couldn't get enough of the information. And now I'm sitting there going, not that you can just watch a YouTube video and execute, right? You guys all work with athletes. Like, you know, like that's not quite how it works. But I mean, the excitement around the women's game, and I mean, you can't deny that Caitlin Clark has a big part in it, but the parity of the women's game. So, I mean, UConn fan for life, and I had people, you know, let's say 10 years or so. UConn's had a rough few years here, but like, I don't want to watch the Final Four because UConn's in it and they're going to thunderwomp everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went, yeah, but they do it so beautifully.
Right.
And I just loved the skill level, and you weren't seeing that. So now, gosh. There are so many teams where it could be on any given day, somebody
Correct.
Could beat somebody, which traditionally has not been the case.
No.
And it's really pretty. And it's, I love fundamentals. It's fundamentally sound, but it's, I mean, it's athletic. I just, and the hype around, I have people asking me that I'm like, you barely even watch basketball, but they're tuning into the women's game right now. And to be perfectly frank, I love that the Big Ten has gotten better, because if the Big Ten is not as strong as it is right now, I think Caitlin Clark has a little bit different impact because people are watching
mm-hmm.
those games.
Yep.
So I think that also, again, rising tides raise all ships. Mm-hmm. And I think we've really seen almost an explosion like in the last 5-6 years where, yes, there's been a push to put women's games on more, which obviously helps. Mm-hmm. But I think the coaches, the women's players and things have kind of risen to that occasion and said, all right, we're going to get better.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, there's a Caitlin Clark shirt every single time in the gym. There's Sabrina shoes.
Yeah. So. And we were talking about that in one of our last podcasts, where when in 95, 96, when Cheryl Swoops had her shoes. Gosh,
yes.
She had her shoes. And that was huge for women's basketball. But you didn't see men wearing Cheryl Swoops.
My kid just got a pair of girl shoes that he can customize.
Right. Now, in these days, we have guys wearing girl shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You didn't do that 20 years ago. You know, so Sabrina's shoes is so popular. And you get guys, girls. She got so many cool colorways. Stewies are out. She's got so many cool colorways. And it's like, you didn't see that back then. You got Caitlin Clark on State Farm commercials. Yeah. And you're like, this is so different. Obviously, the NIL is just crazy to see college athletes get this much. We were on video games and we wasn't, you know, making any money off of it. You know, it's like,
just a number.
Yeah, it's just 30. A number. I was like,
who's that?
And one of the games, I was like really white. I was like, dude, how did they mess that up? So it's like, and just to see how the change of times is like every year is this, you know, getting better and better for all of our athletes as far as being compensated, because we all wish we would have got something,
right?
You know, when we played. But just to see where the game is going with these girls, it's just like so powerful. But I do want to talk about what made you want to get into sports psychologists on a youth level, because that's very hard, you know, to talk to kids.
Yes.
about what they're doing and being their safe haven too, and not, you know, telling, you know, like they want to believe in you, and you telling, they want to make sure that whatever you telling them is
that, and their brains are not fully developed. Right. You know,
it's hard.
Yeah. You know?
Trying to figure out what life is.
Yeah. Right? And you come in and kind of help them through that. Like the worst part of their life is like 13 to like 18, you know, sometimes. Yeah. And you come in and try to help them, you know, unwind a little bit. So why did you want to do that with youth kids?
It's a really good question. I think the first thing was I had colleagues and supervisors that did work with professionals in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And my direct supervisor worked with an MLB team. And so you're not just working like with the Milwaukee Brewers. It's all their farm teams. And you're going to, like, he was in Venezuela. He was in Arizona. And he was all mm-hmm. over the place. And I just went, part of why I was kind of done with coaching was I wanted more balance in my life. And I went, I'm just not going to get that. So that was part of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to kind of be on the beck and call. But the other piece was, I won't say her name, but I had a player that I coached, and I coached at the high school level.
Mm-hmm.
And so super nice, worked so hard. Not the most talented, but like those are the ones that get the coach's heart, right?
Yes.
but she worked really, really hard at a skill, and all of a sudden just something clicked and she did it in a game.
Mm-hmm.
And the look on her face.
Yep.
And I was like, that's confidence.
Yep.
And I think particularly, I think I'm seeing more, you know, young men suffer from the lack of confidence as mm-hmm. well. So, but for me, I have a soft spot for those young girls who are just kind of like, I don't feel worthy. I don't feel I'm good enough. And you know, the all or not thinking, the perfectionist. So
yes.
I just went, how again can I help them get these skills? Not that confidence is necessarily a skill, but we can work on skills to help us build our confidence. I'm like, that's where I want to make that impact. Because if I can help them here at like 12, 13 is really when I start really digging in deep.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have these really impactful developmental years, which like your brain from like 10 to 19, that's huge.
Right.
Now, can we use the toolkit? Can we use the skill and develop it as we go on? So now whatever you do in college, whether you're playing or not, keep using them. But let's be honest, at the end of the day, we're all going to stop being athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So can we now have these tools? I'm always like happier, healthier humans. It's so sprinkles and rainbows. But that's mm-hmm. honestly how I feel. One, we're having this burnout and less enjoyment. Basketball still brings me joy. It gave me, mm-hmm. I sacrificed things. Like I didn't go to my prom because I was in the AAU tournament. My choice.
Right.
It was totally my choice. I was like, getting a dress and like all frilly or basketball game sneakers, you know?
Right.
So yeah, there's choices and you're going to miss out on things, but it still brings me such joy to this day, right? To going back to those experiences I had from college basketball. I mean, I didn't go on my German field trip for high school because mm-hmm. I had basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shoot, I went and played in Germany. So it was kind of like the game gave back to me when I gave back to the game. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that. But I think if we can, again, develop those skills younger,
mm-hmm.
gosh, what better experiences, not just in sport, but in life
yeah,
we're going to
I
have
agree.
With these kids. And that's huge, right? We're seeing yep. the impact of that mental health right now and the lack of some of it's lack of skill. Some of it, obviously, there's predispositions to some of these things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
But man, one little ripple. That's all I want is one little ripple.
Right.
How much are you seeing with kids with so much pressures they have? Schoolwork, sports, they're trying to make their coach happy, but how much of it is their parents pushing them more right. than what they need to be doing? Mm-hmm. Is that majority of what you're seeing? We did a podcast about the parents, good, bad, and ugly, and how out of control parents are, especially nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard to speak in generalizations. Now, that being said, obviously, I said before we got on that I am one of the reasons I don't want to go back into coaching because I don't want to deal with parents.
Yeah.
When I was recruiting as a college coach, every single summer, I saw a parent get kicked out of an AAU basketball game. Mm-hmm. I'm going, for what? Sometimes it's the parents who are just putting too much pressure and really critical and kind of just being jerky.
Yeah.
And other times it's like it comes from this place of love, but it's just not being applied. And so I'm never going to put all the blame on the parents. And sometimes it's lack of doing something. Like when my dad was like, it's okay if you don't play.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't only about basketball when he was talking to me and asking questions. Like, there was other stuff. So I think that's part of it too. So it's not just we think of the parents who's going crazy on the sidelines and getting their kids' face or getting the coach faces, right? Sending the email or the text as soon as the game is over. Why didn't my kid play more? Yeah. So it was definitely that. But I think part of it is too, is as parents, you know, where's the conversation happening? Like, oh, why do you like basketball? You know, mm-hmm. or where do you want to go with this instead of, hey, if we do really well on this, like, did you see this coach that was here? Did you see this coach that was here? And I understand, like, I had a AAU teammate that the only way she was going to college was if she got a scholarship. So I totally get that side of it too.
Right.
But we can still kind of have that in the back of our minds. But parents having that conversation of just like, hey, what'd you do that was fun today? You know?
Yeah, right. Right.
So,
and I think that's the hard part too, is we, in my position as a club director, we see a lot of parents that live through their kids mm-hmm. and not for their kids.
Yeah, because it's rare to say it's okay if you don't play.
Right, right.
for a parent, because they're like, oh my god.
Right. Yeah. Well, like your dad, he played, you know, professionally, you know, with the Browns, and you know, I played, and the people who know the game, and just telling your kids like, hey, how was your day at school today? That had nothing to do with basketball. You know, what grades did you, you know, did you get good grades today? Did you say please and thank you today? Did you hold a door for someone? Like, that's the stuff that really matters. And, you know, we don't need to live through our kids. But some people, they put the pressures of the world on their kids because that's their way out too. You know, and they also know this is the only way that they maybe can afford something for their kids. Mm-hmm. So they put all this pressure on them to be super successful early. Now it's getting earlier and earlier, you know, 9, 10, you know, these kids are thinking they Jordan already. And, you know, they forget the steps to be Jordan or Curry or whoever they dream to be. And I think that's some of the things that are missing in today's.
As a parent, you know, you always hear, well, I didn't know they were struggling, or what are some signs? And I know it's kind of vague and it's kind of hard to think of, but early signs as a parent to notice that your kid is struggling, you know, emotionally. I know it's kind of a hard question, but as a parent, I don't think we know what to look for sometimes.
Sure. And I think it's gonna be a little bit of a politician answer, but I'll get more into it. But I think part of it is, first of all, just try to develop a relationship with your kids and not to be friends, right? Mm-hmm. Like, my job as a coach is not to be your friend, and I'm not a parent, but like, a job as a parent, it's not to be their friend, right? But I do want to ask, hey, like, or what'd you do nice for someone to say? Did you hold the door open? Did you say please and thank you?
Right.
And opening up that conversation so you better understand your kid. Now, trust me, I have worked with 13-year-olds. I have worked with high school boys. That's not always easy. but I think that's a really good start, is making sure that you as a parent, because the questions that you ask, oh, how did practice go today, or what coach say to you, mm-hmm. whether you intend that or not, sometimes can be like, oh, so it's really important that mm-hmm. this happens. So not that you can't ask about practices and sports, but get some of those things in. And again, it's hard when you have teenagers. Sometimes it's the moodiness. Is my child having kind of these just uncharacteristic outbursts that are going on? And
as a father of three girls, it's a little harder.
Yes. Right. I have apologized to my parents for things I've done in my teens.
Sure, we all have.
Like, oh shoot, my parents were right. I was so mean. Yeah. So I think that's part of it. Like, again, you have to know your kid. If them kind of hanging out in the room is normal, but like, they really just like becoming more withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, it's hard because everybody is so different. Or how are they talking about, you know, after a game, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did it, and it scored so this many points, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. Or the coach is so horrible, I can't believe the coach did this. Mm-hmm. Now, typically that they're learning that from a parent. Or again, we've got social media now, so they could be learning it from other spaces. But I think that's something too, is what's the language like of your child? Mm-hmm. What's happening there? Pay attention. And I'll be honest, it's hard. I've got little niece and nephews, and instead of going, oh, you did such a great job, hey, you worked really hard for that, or that was really thoughtful, and that focus on the progress and not the results, which is really not how we're wired.
Right, right.
Especially in sports, let's be honest.
And Max talks about that a lot with the process-driven, you know.
Yeah, rather than results.
Rather than results. And I think that's how you have to be with your kids, too. You got to be process-driven, you know, the results. Or you're too high, you're too low all the time. I had 20 points. Now I want to stay after the game and say hi to everyone and be a part of the group. Well, now I had 5 points or 0 points, and now I'm moody and I'm going right to the locker room. So if you're process-driven, that's going to help you be a better person and a better player, you know, as opposed to results, you know. And I think that's what parents – spew that onto their kids as well. It's like, oh, it's the coaches. You only had 5 today. They didn't run enough plays for you. Now they starting to get a perception of what the coach is, you know, and that's the one thing that all of us have to do better who have kids and also who are directors. And if you feel a certain way about a coach, don't let what you feel about that coach, let the kid hear it. You know, because now they're getting all of this information, and now it gets harder for them to listen to that coach and listen. They're listening to the parent in the crowd and looking at you for reinsurance, where now they, when they turn 18, 19, they don't have that reinsurance. They can't keep running home to you to say, my boss didn't like me, or my wife or husband didn't like me. What to do? It's like, you know, we're teaching them, you know, early that, you know, they can run back, you know. And one of your things you said very early on when we were working together with our kids is having a player learn how to verbalize what to say to a coach as opposed to a parent, you know. And I thought that was a huge thing for all those kids. They were taking notes. We're on Zoom. It was 90 to 100 kids. You know, and the kids are writing down things. And one of the questions was, how can I talk to my coach about how I felt about the year? You know, and, you know, you gave great examples of what to do and what to say. And one of the things was, don't bring your parent. You know, this, you can go over your list with your parent, but you go in and try to build a rapport first with your coach. Now, if that doesn't work, then we go down different avenues. But I thought that was very special to kind of mention.
As a coach, again, we talked about the parents' point of view. As a coach point of view, we see a lot of coaches that are extremely, extremely hard on these young kids. As a coach for a girl, I'm not hard on my girls. What is a balance? I mean, what can these kids take? I know.
I really appreciate all the soft questions.
Like, what can they?
Yeah, that's,
what can they take? You know, as a fifth, sixth, seventh grader, how much can they take?
You know, I almost go, I don't think it's necessarily how much they can take. It's what are you giving them? Mm-hmm. In the sense of, so like, don't get it twisted. My dad coached me. My dad was might have been one of the hardest coaches I had, but he was never demeaning. I mean, we had some fun, like, you know, on the ride home talks after games.
Right.
But that's to be expected as a coach's kid. Yep. But he was always really fair. And let's see, I was in middle school, so I was like in that really fun time too. Mm-hmm. But he was direct with kids, and I think probably a little harder on me, right? Because, but again, he knows me.
I was harder on my daughter.
And he knew my goals. So he's like, well, if you want to get to this level, this is what it's gonna, you know, look like. And I truly never felt like he ever crossed the line. But he was football too, so I was like, oh, you're doing a really good job with girls, right? That's very different. But I think for coaches, it's how am I kind of putting my practice together? Like, it starts with what my values are and how I want that to come across. And if we're always focused, and it can be really simple, but if I'm always focused, I get, we have to game plan. We have to talk about the other team and things like that. But then that also means as a player, I'm so concerned what everyone else is doing. And this, when we get like that middle school, like high school's a little bit different, but in those younger, like that first half of the kind of youth phase, are they having fun? Now, it doesn't mean they get to do whatever they want and run around. We don't have rules or structure, but how can we bring enjoyment and still develop skill?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it is
that's never, a big part of
like, if you don't love it.
Yeah.
Dang.
Right. Right.
It's rough.
But also some players love it, mm-hmm. you know, and some players just like it. And some players is for their social friends.
Yeah.
You know, and as a coach, you can't decipher which one that is because at fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, it's hard mm-hmm. because some of them just like it. You might have one or two to four players that love it. This is their identity. But half the team, they just here to get better and process and just be around their friends. And that's their social, you know, being too. So to have that fine balance of what they can take, what they can't take, you got to teeter with that because you don't know. You don't know what they can take. You don't know how direct you can be to a kid. You don't know how undirect you need to be with a kid. You don't know, you know, especially boys, how much ADHD, AD. I mean, they might be everywhere, you know, boys, you know, and you don't, that's comes from coaching and adjusting to your style. I think every coach dies on their sword too much. Yes. You know, you have to adjust to the people that's in front of you to get the best out of them. And it also, in terms, it helps you be a better coach yourself because you learn how to deal with different types of people.
And the biggest way, I think Steve Novak touched on it yesterday, like creating the environment yep. to make sure the gym is a positive environment in practice where they enjoy coming to, like mm-hmm. and you're happy, they're excited to be with that group. But understanding, you first of all, you have to have, like you call it a political answer before, but like the relationship and how connected you are to your players allows you to kind of know how much they can take and like knows where you're coming from. Like Zach Benn, I'll use Zach Benn for an example because we've sat in here, we've ate dinner together, we've talked with each other, and then yesterday I like got on him right away in practice for a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And he says nothing. He just asked me, what was I doing wrong there?
Right.
So like building outside relationships, asking him how school was, like that's at like the center of probably everything we do as coaches is the relationship. And then knowing how, like to Joe's point, a different kid's going to have to get talked to or called out in a different way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that was the hard part for me because when you build in these relationships as a coach, when they gone, it's like, damn, that was a relationship like we were talking about, Brittany. Yep. Like, you know, because you don't, I don't want to say this, but as a coach, you do want to know everyone, but you don't want to know everyone. Because it's hard when you give them a piece of you and then they're not there anymore and vice versa, you know? So it's like, do I really want to, it's, I don't know. It's like a step you take. Like, do I want to cross this to really make that a family member? Or do I want to stay in this coaching lane and just make them a part of the team? And most of the time when you do it the right way, they become like an extension of your family.
Yeah, that's why we cry the whole bunch of children in August.
And it becomes harder and harder in a good way to coach kids that you really care about. So now you can be more direct. Now you can have more talks. Now you can get into the interpersonal relationships that they may have with boyfriends or girlfriends. And how is that life going? And how is your mom? Or if they're divorced and, you know, how you can start talking about that. Because if a kid cares that, if they know you care about that stuff, when that light comes on, they're going to run through a brick yes. wall for you. Most of the time, the best coaches I played for, you know, so. When I had kids that I can see something wrong with them, right? We had Tim Franks on, which was a great podcast. That's our number one stream mm-hmm. podcast. And he talked about his mental health and the importance of seeing someone to talk about his problems. He got admitted to Rogers twice, you know, and he talked about that, the self-harm. He talked about that on air, you know.
Which is incredible.
Which is incredible.
Also, about the relationship you guys have, that he felt comfortable enough to come into this space. That's
correct.
This is also private but public.
Right.
That
right.
speaks volumes to what you guys do here too.
Right. And for him to do that, and he was a lightning rod for a lot of our players. It's like, man, I'm going through something too, coach. Like, you know, come. Yeah. And when you have a player like that, it becomes more like that's your family member, but also he's helping other people open up about different problems that they may have. And when you have that as a coach, it's like that. Those are the relationships you want to build with every group going after that mm-hmm. is. That's the family member type of process we want to get to. So come July and August, the one tiers that we have for one group should be every group because that's how much we pour into them and they pour into us. But we do notice when something's wrong, you know, and as a coach, what should we do? in those settings. Like, you know, sometimes it's from the parents, you know, and we can't run to them with the problem because it's written on the kid's place. Like, oh, I don't want them to know, you know. And how can we help those athletes who we know are dealing with adversity, but we know we can't give it to their caretaker with that?
Also a softball question. Thank you. You know, I
should have said this was not going to be easy.
No, it's not easy. No.
You know, and part of me kind of goes, well, what's the extent of what's happening at home? What's going on? You know, again, depending on, you know, like the other relationships that I miss most about college are the parents, because I love the parents in my group. So what kind of relationship do you have with the parents? And even if you think you have a good one, sometimes like, oh, they do not like me, actually, because they went off on, you know, Twitter, X, whatever.
Right.
And said some really lovely things about me. So in some ways, I think it depends. But I think kind of one, and I have done this in my own private practice, too, is I sit with everybody as like a consult to start. And then the child and I are one-on-one in the space. And I kind of will say, do you feel comfortable talking to like your parent about that? If something's going on with the parent. So if they're comfortable talking to their parents, then I'll work with them on, okay, here's how we could approach it. You know, how do you feel about that? And I do think it needs to be collaborative, right? If they're going to, especially if they're going to kind of take the initiative, but it's scary because how many opportunities do younger kids have to do that? Now, if they don't want to talk to their parents, part of me is like, gosh, that's really tough. And again, what's the specific situation look like? But it's going, okay, like, I think you still encourage. And again, if we're not talking like extreme situations at home, and that's a whole kind of another, do we need to get other people involved, right? But if we're just talking in general, my parents put a lot of pressure on me. They're kind of acting crazy at the game and it like stresses me out. I always go, do you want me to say something? And then again, if they're saying no, then it's like, okay, so if you're going to choose not to talk to your parents and you choose that you don't want me to, and again, that's fine, right? I understand that. But then we have to come up with a plan to help you.
Right.
And that could just be, you know, if it's struggling in the game, maybe they're yelling a lot. Okay, is there something that you and that athlete, it's just a nod. It's just saying a phrase and doesn't have to be anything that's like super specific. So just something simple. And again, it's very general because obviously every situation is different. You know, if it's pressure at home, and my rules always are like the, again, barring something that we need to like level up a little bit, house rules and coach rules supersede me. So I'm going, I don't want you to ever be disrespectful to your parents. And so I want you to, you know, we kind of got to be an adult in some of these situations. And for some of them, it's like, okay, maybe what you just need to do is take some time to, I usually start with like 2 minutes, and it's 2 minutes of mindfulness or 2 minutes of breathing. And again, just kind of whatever feels good for them. But I want to, and not, and again, never an accusatory way. If you're going to choose not to talk to your parents, if you're going to choose to have me not to, it's okay. But then here are options. Because I think the biggest thing that in my life, in my practice, ask anybody that I've ever met, we're not just going to do this dance. Like, it's not helpful. And then it tends to be, that's where we go to, well, it's that fault, it's your fault, it's this fault. And that's also really not healthy when we're looking at, again, like you said, it's not just basketball. How are we handling our work environment, our bosses, and our relationships? So how can I help you get some tools? If it's really bad, you can always just send them to me. But I think those are some things, like sometimes just being able to have someone to chat with.
So like, what's one of the tools that you give? So for instance, me, I've dealt with adversity with losing parents at an early age, both my parents before I was 25 to 30, you know, both my parents passed away. So I dealt with a lot of that. And one of the coping things that I do is I still play 2 or 3 days a week, and I do hot yoga, you know, and that sweating and like that, you know, that camaraderie of still getting up and down the court, that helps me cope with the rest of my day, you know. So what are the couple of things that you try to tell your athletes to do with some of your practices that you do with your athletes?
Sure. I'll be honest. I stay within my scope, but I always ask them, how's your sleep?
Yep.
And what are we putting in our bodies? That is not like the area where I live, but I think it's an important conversation to have. And you kind of talk about like the homework and all this, like, well, what's your sleep looking like?
Right.
Because that is so important. And not just physically, not just for growing bodies, but injured bodies, for worn down bodies, mm-hmm. but helps reset our brain too. So I do think that's, mm-hmm. again, something I will talk with that. I just actually had a session last night, and we spent a lot of it talking about, hey, what's your sleep look like, what we can do. But one of the things that I really believe is a foundational skill to help with all those other things is mindfulness. Hmm. And the reason being is we have so many thoughts that run through our head that we have zero control over. And right. it's frustrating because you're like, this, it's my brain. I own this, don't I? And it's like, well, like we have some things we can control, but stuff's going to pop in and it's okay. So mindfulness helps us, one, kind of get in that present moment. I can acknowledge maybe that negative thing or that thing that's distracting, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't always have to be negative, but if it takes away my focus, I acknowledge it, kind of move on. And eventually it will work towards, you know, lots of kind of self-talk type things. I have athletes that really enjoy imagery and journaling. Mm-hmm. But I think the mindfulness is a really good place to start because we are not going to be judgmental. We're constantly comparing ourselves and we're on our, most kids are on their phone. I prefer a computer because I'm old, but mm-hmm. everybody's on their phone. I'm comparing myself to maybe it's a teammate. Maybe it's somebody that is like, I'm in like a recruiting competition with, or
right.
maybe I'm comparing myself to Caitlin Clark. That might be a reach, but okay. Right. So let's just kind of stop all the external noise that's coming in. I think that's really powerful. And that helps us when we're talking about imagery. When I'm on the free throw line and the fans are going crazy and you've got this coach yelling and, oh gosh, there's mom again yelling. Okay, this is where I am. I can block that out and I can focus. And I think it's just, right. I think we don't pause enough in general mm-hmm. in life. And pausing, again, doesn't mean I grab my phone or I go sit down and binge Netflix.
Yeah.
It's intentional time.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, see, that's a question, right? So as a college athlete, you know the schedule, right? You're up early, lifting weights, practice, game days, whatever. How can athletes find time to take a little self-reflection, take a little time, you know, what is your, you know, advice for that?
Mm-hmm. In my general sense of point, if that's important to you, and I think that's something we have to, like, I think self-care gets tossed around a lot in a kind of casual way, but it is like intentionally taking that time.
Yes.
Part of me is like, if that's important to you, you're going to make time. So
correct.
There's an AD that we have our coaches meeting and he went, you can be a good student, a good athlete, a good friend. He goes, you can be really good at two of those. You can't be really good at all three. And I think that's hard. And I'm going to go specifically as a college student athlete. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on. One, it's a huge transition just from being a senior in high school to now I'm on my own and yeah. I can like do what I want. And I, right? So there's this whole new sense of freedom. And all the people around me get to do whatever they want and go out. But I'm here as an athlete. Like, right. You really do have a job to do.
Correct.
So that means I have to operate differently. So I think that's really challenging. So it's like, maybe you don't go out. Doesn't mean you can't have a social life. I'm not saying that. But if, and again, I think our conversation around mental health, it's becoming more common. And we're understanding that mental health doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means mm-hmm. we got to work on some things and it's okay. And ultimately, working on it is going to help us better than just ignoring it. And again, still struggling with getting people to be open about that. But
yeah, because there's those athletes. Oh, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep running it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, boom, it hits them.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell people all the time when they're like, oh, I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. I'm like, pull up your phone right now. And I want to know how much time you spend on every app.
Right.
And self-care doesn't have to be an hour, doesn't have to be 30 minutes. For most, I'm like, hey, let's spend 2 minutes. Or mm-hmm. I got this from a conference and I wish I could remember her name because I can't take credit for it. But she goes, she'll challenge her athletes from class one to class two, don't look at your phone. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, so I'm just walking. yes, you're just walking. But even that can be really powerful because again, we're inundated right. with so much
right.
that just to put that phone away and it's okay. We're not missing anything. And that, you know, probably 2 minute walk.
Right.
It can be little things like that. Someone's talking about taking time for yourself. I think I really want that message to get across that it doesn't have to be this huge, it can be, but it doesn't have to be this huge big thing.
Yeah.
Just like working out, you don't need to go to the gym for 2 hours a day.
Right.
Let's just get some movement in.
Even traveling to your games, you know, that little time on the bus or
yeah.
bigger schools, the plane or whatever, take right. that time.
Yeah.
Reflect.
Yep.
Yeah. Get a journal. Put your headphones on. There's tons of different, I mean, podcast lists that you can listen to that talk about things. Mm-hmm. Find a meditation, episode. Or I do like the apps. I don't think they're a substitute for like mental health care or even kind of working on those mental skills. I want to be really clear on that. But those can be great. Mm-hmm. And I think too that we're in a space where teammates are going to be respectful of, hey, I just need my time. You don't have to tell them necessarily what you're doing, right?
Everyone's
got their headphones in. So they're going to kind of give you that space. And I think that's, again, there's so much out there that you can access. That's, again, it's low hanging fruit, right? Yep. Pull up your phone, pull up an app, boom.
Yeah. And I think so too. I mean, since COVID hit, there's the message around mental health has been so much more uplifting than it was before it. And you just see more and more athletes, more and more professionals, celebrities talking about it. So it opens up more doors for some of our kids, you know, to talk about it. When we had, you know, we go back to Tim Franks, when we had him on, there's so many emails and parents and messages about their fourth or fifth grade. It's like, if he's talking about it, you know, it's easier for my fourth and fifth grader to say something to me,
absolutely,
you know, about it. So it's encouraging to see where it's going. But I do think that little mental break every day is important. You know, from 2 to 3, usually every day, I don't do anything. I don't look at my phone. I put it on do not disturb. I stay away from it, you know, because I know you need a reset, you know, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. If you have a mental reset, it can last you the rest of the day, especially as we get older. You know, sometimes you're by 7 o'clock, if you're up all day, by 9 o'clock, I'm ready to get into bed. So by 7 o'clock, I'm not trying to deal with a fourth grader who's being crazy at practice. So you got to reset your whole mindset so you don't come in, you know, a certain way as well as coaches.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
you got to be prepared where the kids should never know if you're high or low or what kind of mood you're in or your dog died today. They should never know how you feel.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, you should be the same person, you know, every day, which is hard to do if you're a person that doesn't take time, you know, whether it's a coach, a player, a parent. I think everyone needs a personal reset because it's going to spew on somebody if you don't. You know, and you usually regret it when you do it. You're like, you know, it's one of those days, man.
You mentioned earlier a little bit of nutrition because everybody's chemically balanced a certain way. How much nutrition is an effect to your mental health? I mean,
there's a lot out there that says it has a huge, huge impact. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but, you know, I think part of it is too, we're just not very aware of how things affect us all the time too. Mm-hmm. And now I used to be the person that I don't know if Orv's is still around, but pizza. Mm-hmm. I used to have an Orv's frozen pizza before every home game. Horrible decision.
Before the game.
Before the game. Because I'm wild. I'm wild, Joe. granted, I had like a few hours, but I'm like, idiot. And so it's like when you're young, you also get away with it. Right.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, oh, if I can perform, because we think performance, it's just like this physical thing. We don't think, oh, after I eat that, I just feel like I can't focus. And I know, especially when we were in college, our coaches were like, don't drink Red Bull, don't do this, because they were nervous about us like popping on a drug test. I'm like, okay. But, you know, you can't deny that when we're putting some of these things into our body, that like my focus might be a little off. It might be hard for me to really sit here and concentrate and know what's going on and what's happening to the, you know. And I think we already have a little bit of a shortened attention span now anyways, but also in how we're like your food is your fuel, so it's going to affect how you mentally perform as well as you physically perform. Now, do I think you have to be super strict in counting macros? No, everything is different, but can we be aware about eating more? Like, I'm very much like, can we eat some as minimal processed foods, more whole foods as we can? And there's a lot of different ways you can do that. But you're huge, again, mentally developing, physically developing. So let's put really good, you know, fuel and building blocks, really, into our body.
So you played overseas?
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that and the pressures of playing overseas after college. Joe played overseas. Travis talked about his overseas. And, you know, we've got the guys' perspective. We kind of want to hear, we got a lot of girls on in their program and stuff. They'd like to hear about your perspective on that.
Sure. So I was getting close to graduating. I went, I don't want a real job. I really want to play overseas. Like, who do I know? So my coaches were helping me, and I got a hold of an agent. And I remember hearing stories. Now, granted, I had a teammate that had a wonderful experience, but then I had someone else that was just, it was horror stories of not getting paid and really bad conditions and things like that. And it was like, and again, I'm stubborn. So I'm like, oh, heck yeah, I'm still going to do it. So I got in contact with an agent from Germany, and I found out like some backstory to some of this, where they weren't really super prepared for me. They're going to try to shove me in like a one room flat with like two other girls.
Yeah.
So in some ways I was really fortunate because I lived with a woman and her two sons, and she played on the second team. So kind of like the JV team, if you will.
Yeah.
And I had my own room, my own space. She had a lovely yard and, I had a wonderful time. They took care of me.
Right.
The dad of the woman I lived with worked at the U.S. Embassy. So I got to go on these. I mean, he took me on like, I'm a history nerd. So he took me on like a tour of the Heidelberg Castle, and we talked all about this. So I was like very, very fortunate. But in terms of the pressure, I'll be honest, I was like, okay, I'm doing well. I, again, had taken German even through college, because I had to meet that requirement. So I had a basic understanding. And then, of course, I realized I was taught like the highbrow Deutsch and not apparently the common German. So I was like, oh, they're like, no, don't pronounce it like this. Like, you'll sound too fancy. I was like, guys, I'm just trying to get through the day.
Right,
But the biggest shock for me was that I had 16-year-olds on my team.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't going and playing with like even 18 and up. I had some younger girls on the team. So that was more a shock to me than anything else. And then the other piece was I was playing well. I was doing well. And then the coach was thinking about like releasing me at the break. And I was like, okay. And I talked to my agent about it, and it was funny because in the meeting with the coach and, for lack of a better word, like our director, like you could tell he didn't agree with it. He was mad the whole time. And I'm like, first of all, y'all need to be on the same page. You can disagree behind the scenes, but this is very confusing to me.
Right.
Even my agent, she's like, don't even worry about it. She goes, everything's good. She's like, we'll find a place for you. So I do appreciate that. Like, I had her support because, I mean, I had no one over there. Right.
Right.
And I'm like, don't talk to my parents a ton or whatever. Fortunately, she kept me on.
Yeah.
But I kind of was like, yeah. It's kind of how I felt. There's that little cockiness coming back in.
Right.
But I had a really great time. For me, they took care of everything. So I worked out. I played basketball. I traveled. Yep. And I got to go out in Germany and hang out and see some really cool stuff. So I just think I was so blessed. And again, it was kind of like just the game sort of giving back in a really cool way, because I missed on some opportunities in high school.
Right.
But yeah, it was cool. I played against some national team players. Mm-hmm. And even a few years ago, I ran into somebody that we actually played against each other. And I was like, oh, you played during this year? I was like, oh, wow. Like, you were there when I was there.
So did you get a chance to see other countries while you were there?
I didn't get a chance to travel much, just because like with my visa, they had to send me home for a certain time. So I didn't get any downtime.
Right.
I had a little bit at the end. But yeah, I didn't get a ton of downtime. So I went to some of the bigger cities in Germany. So yeah, that was fun. I loved it. If you can do it, try it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It helps shape who you are. Just being in another country where you don't know people and having to learn how to get out of your comfort zone and speak different languages and different cultures, different food, different personalities, learning what body language means, because you may not understand someone, you know, or I had a person trying to translate for us, you know, it's like I'm in Japan and the translator is talking, but I'm looking at the coach. I'm looking at his body language like, this coach not happy. Oh, he's not saying much. I was like, no, he's something's not right today. You know, like, let us know the truth here. So just like understanding some of the stuff that you learn in high school and college when you're on your own. Now you got 20 hours out of the day to kind of figure out what you want to do. You know, and I think that's the time where you really learn a lot about yourself, because college is a big bubble.
Yes.
It's A, B, C, D, sleep. You know, overseas is like, it's 20 hours. You're like, oh, boy. And then you're on different time zones.
A, B, C, D, sleep, drink.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of D. D is like the beer and then everything. then go to sleep. But, you know, overseas, it's like you got 20 hours and you're in different time zones. You know, you're trying to stay up. At my point, it was the beginning of Skype. So I'm like trying to Skype people, but it's the different times. And it was just like, man, this is, and you're trying to get the webcam because you didn't have it on your computer at the time. It was webcam. So it was different times, you know, to be over there. But it was so fun to learn about yourself, because when you came back, you had a totally different perspective of life, of what you need or what you don't need, and what the Europeans do as opposed to what we do. And the relationships change, and, you know, people, you know, it's just, I learned so much of playing that, and we use it every day when we're talking to our kids about different things that they're doing and how to cope with the everyday life and pressures of what a sport can do for you. But it's so much fun at the end of the tunnel if you get that chance. Mm-hmm.
And I know you said you never, you know, want to do coaching again and stuff, but honestly, being involved with my daughter playing high school basketball, coaching girls, I think your position though on a coaching staff would help a lot of players, just to have that type of position on a coaching staff, not necessarily being involved with the X's and O's, but being on that bench when a girl comes off the, or a guy comes off that bench, you know, and their head is down, just to have that person.
It's getting more common in at the professional sport.
Yes.
You'll see probably.
But I think high school is important.
I agree.
For sure. Yes. Totally. It's probably more important at the youth level than it is professionally.
Yep.
To actually have involved. I mean, it's equally important, but those guys have pretty big checks where they could go see someone.
Yeah.
I think part of that too will probably sprinkle down to college and high levels. For your, like, what is the breakthrough moment for you in your job? Like, you're like, oh, I got this person to, he figured it out, she figured it out. Do you feel that in the meeting sometimes? Or is it like, if I went and watched this person perform, that they get it? Or you just don't, like, is there an end game kind of that you can see, like, oh, I got them, like, they understand it now? Or is it just the process day after day doing it? Like, what is that breakthrough moment like when you have it?
I don't know if I wouldn't say it's the same every time. And typically it's not from me watching them. Sometimes it's in a meeting, but it's usually like, hey, I did this and it worked. Mm-hmm. And whatever that is that we're working on. Mm-hmm. So, and I'll tell people, I use like a 10 minute, let's say it's a 10 minute, right? 10 minute quarter. Can't keep track of all these different. but if I have 10 negative thoughts in 10 minutes, so a negative thought a minute, we're not going to go from 10 to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly ever. Like, I will tell you, I'm a very confident person. Every now and then I'm like, oh man, you really messed that up, right?
Right.
So like, those are going to happen. I think that's part of it, is setting the expectation. But then when it's like, I had 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10, maybe it's back to 10 out of 10. So when they kind of go, hey, I did it, it worked. Or sometimes like, you know what? I didn't have to think about it. This just happens. And again, it depends on what that skill is that we're working on, what the issue is that they're going through. But it's when, to me, it's when they report it.
Right.
When they tell me, hey, this happened. So sometimes there are a couple and I'm going, can we please celebrate this win? They think I'm nuts. And I'm like, trust me, if you met any of my friends, I'm not this, you know, strawberry shortcake, all bubbles and sprinkles girl, but let's celebrate that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were able to work through it on your own. Cause I think that's really important. Like, when you mentioned the thing on the bench, I've had people say to me, hey, I'd love for you to come sit on the bench. And one, I'm very big on consistency. If I'm not doing it from day one, I'm not, you don't bring me in to do that. But also, I'm sure you've all seen it. The kids are always looking at mom and dad, or always looking at their coach. Like, okay, was that okay? That okay? Is that okay? So my goal is, one, for you not to need me. So I have a horrible business plan already. But two, I want you, right? But in that game, I want you to feel confident. And part of that is feeling the confidence in this
100%.
Game, to be able to, maybe you do have to go to the end of the bench, and maybe you do have to take 30 seconds or a minute, right? And just kind of collect yourself. But I think that's when they can kind of do that on their own is huge, because I don't want anyone to think they need me. I'm here to, like, I consider myself a coach, like with the title. I have to use consultant because that's what the trademark, you know, is for my organization. But I really consider myself more of a coach. That's how I approach my practice too. We don't just have a session and then we're done. Like, I'm following up with you to see how things are going.
And that's why it's hard for us as directors, is when we go to these games, you never win because I never try to make eye contact with the players as they play because it's just a weird dynamic because sometimes you agree with the coaches, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you're telling them to sup back in, get back in there. So I try my best not to even, I just be bland at the games. But when you get in these regional sectionals and one side you have four or five players that win, the other side you got four or five players that lose. You know, yeah. So you're probably going to consult the people that lose, you know, yep. first, you know, just to make sure that, you know, they're okay. And that's part of the job as being a coach is figuring that out. But I do think that in the area that we live in the North Shore area, they should have on a youth level, because they all got money in at the youth level to have a mental health consultant.
I agree.
And you can, it don't have to be four of you. It can be for the whole North Shore. This is our person for the whole North Shore.
It's
you know?
Funny you say that because I'm like, that's my dream. Like, get me in at the conference level.
Correct. Correct.
And I can kind of be that person.
Well, you're right. You had to start by talking with us right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, boys, let's make it start.
Because I think that's so important. I mean, even for my kids that are fourth graders and they deal with different things that people say in a crowd and different things like that.
Oh, sure.
They don't know. Their little brains are like, wait, what? They don't like me? You know, they don't know. So to have someone to kind of talk to them and it doesn't have to always be a parent mm-hmm. is something you want for your kids, you know. And from the youth programs to the conferences, you know, for high school, they should have a consultant that they go through and say, hey, can you come, you know, for Homestead for 2 weeks to talk to our guys program, our girls program?
Well, we do, not to interrupt, but we do boot camps. We do all these other camps. Why not have a mental camp?
Correct.
Amen, yep. sir. Amen. Yep. Yeah.
It's so true. And I think that's the message that we need to have, you know, and that's something we've done with you in the past and just say, hey, this is what we're doing. You know, and we put it on everyone's team snap and mm-hmm. everyone knows the dates. This is the time we're doing it. I just think it's important to have that outlet. So when someone confidentially come to you and say, I'm struggling and I need some help. Well, you remember we talked to so-and-so. It's like, oh yeah, let me reach out to her, yep. you know? Yep. And that's a huge thing for me because you want people you trust and believe in and vice versa. And they at least have some rapport. But the main thing that I love about what you do is you played the game and you understand the game and you've been through adversity in the game on many occasions as a coach, as a player. So that relatability goes a long way to open up, especially young men and women to about like, oh, you played, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And I think that's pretty cool to have.
And that's resource. What makes Joel kind of special, being the director he is, you know, like with Tim, you know, Joel can say, I grew up in Chicago. I went through this.
Yep.
I went through this injury. Mm-hmm. I was by myself here, mm-hmm. you know, just having that relatability, you know, is huge.
Yeah. That's how I try to get buy-in right away. I'm like, I played professional basketball. Like that gets the boys really interested. Sometimes the girls are like, cool. But other times like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
Do you see a specific sport more so that you deal with, or is it kind of all over the map?
Basketball, hands down. And part of that just is that's where all my contacts are. That's all the people I know. In terms of like groups, I mean, I've worked with a lot because I have worked with high schools and things like that. A lot of soccer is probably my other mm-hmm. bigger
team. I think they're the longest seasons.
Yeah, basketball.
Football is September, November, or whatever.
Golf. Yeah. Have you watched the second season of Full Swing?
No, not yet.
There's a mental coach there. It's with Wyndham Clark. Mm-hmm. And she's like by his side through one of the tournaments on a Sunday when he breaks through. Like golfing mental coaches have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that'd be a fun job.
it's a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah.
Like, oh, golfers, I'm like, okay.
But getting back to basketball season, November. March.
November to November.
Yeah. And now April. Yeah, November to November, right? And the pressures with it.
Yeah.
And that's why I love you guys so much. And this was when I think I reached out to you initially. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have AAU programs that I'm like, I don't think our values align.
Right.
And for you, the biggest thing on the website was we know we have athletes that are multi-sport athletes. Correct. Now, how they choose to do that, and I'm not saying that you can't be more dedicated to that. Like, trust me, I've been there, I get that. But I think that's so important
because
one, again, enjoy your sport, play different sports, do those things. And sometimes that message gets lost. So I really appreciate any kind of higher level club team. I appreciate when they say that, because
right.
that's not often the message that happens. And that in itself can just add a lot of pressure. Now, and you know this side of it better than me, but if you're like, okay, if we want to get to this level, as you get older, you do have to make some sacrifices, which I know my right. high school ADs do not like to hear.
Right.
But it's kind of just the way it's going, whether good or bad. Yeah, that's.
But you got to have that. I mean, we got our girls, you know, our top team. We probably got 5 girls that are multi-sport in track mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
You know, only thing we ask for them is to come to some practices and walk through some plays. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to put too much on their bodies and minds because it can be taxing. You know, and as athletes, you got to learn how to deal with being really good at something and then being average at something and not very good at something. I mean, more you know that balance, the better you're going to be as a person.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we're not going to all be stars in every position we're in. High school, it might be a star, then it starts to slowly go the other way. You know, college, you're one of the guys, and then, you know, it might go back as a professional. But I just think that's a cool thing to have, you know, relatability to relate to your players.
And yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's a big thing of what you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting really good at this stuff because this was one of our longer ones again, too. But honestly, probably the most important one, in my opinion.
Again, you no know, pressure. Hopefully I gave you good stuff.
Well, the information you gave is so important.
Yeah. Know? So tell us, how can we reach you? How can people reach out to you and different things like that?
Sure. So Herrick Performance Consulting is my business. So herrickperformance.com is the website. I'm not great at social media, but you can DM me at Herrick Performance. I'm working on it. I'm old, people. I'm old. I just do Instagram, no TikTok. And then email is dr.b as in Brittany, and then Herrick, H-E-R-R-I-C-K, @gmail.com. It feels weird giving out my phone number, so I'm going to leave. No, I think I'm going to leave that off. But yeah, just reach out to me. Typically what happens, if it's a parent reaching out to me, we're going to have just a brief phone call just to kind of see what's going on, to see if it's appropriate, if mm-hmm. I work with your child or not. And then the next step would be we have a call and consult, about 30 minutes, mostly to do a vibe check. Do you want mm-hmm. me to work with your child or not? And then two, so everyone's on the same page. And then from there, we move forward. Sessions are one-on-one. Or heck, if you've got teams, guys, and I know obviously we're here with Chapman, but even, mm-hmm. you know, I do group work as well.
Yes, you
and
do.
Let's be honest, that tends to be more cost effective.
Right.
I mean,
yep.
We're going to be direct and honest here. It's, yep. it's cheaper to do the group stuff.
Right.
So feel free to contact me on that as well.
What is considered a group? Just a team, a group of like siblings? Or what?
I mean, well, if it's like siblings or one or two, like I've done like those smaller groups, so 5 or more, but, and really what I do is we're going to make sure it works for you. So like, you know, Joe mm-hmm. and I, when we've done this, we've sat down, this is what's going on. These are some ideas we can do.
Yep.
If it's a little bit smaller group, I still do that. It just, that process might look a little yep. different.
But, mm-hmm. but it's so it cool that when we did our group work, it was one or two people out of the group of, let's say, 10 or 15. It's like, oh, can I get her number? You know, mm-hmm. that's the fun part for saying. All
if,
of us.
If you get one athlete.
Yeah.
When you're on your way home and you get an email, we've done our job to,
correct.
To give back, right? And yep. that's the whole point of why we're kind of doing this podcast, is to give yep. back to the athletes that are part of your CBA family.
Yeah. So. And, you know, there's just so much going on in this world. For every kid that we help, there's a kid that's, you know, dying, you know, yeah. from this. So, you know, doing this kind of podcast is, you know, therapeutical for all of us, too. You know, there was a kid who just passed away. Mm-hmm. last week,
yep.
you know, so just knowing that we can save others by talking, you know, about this stuff is something as a coach and a professional athlete. We want to continue to open the door to make sure that, you know, everyone is feeling comfortable to talk about this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Brittany. It was, like I said, probably the best one we did and
yeah.
one of the most important. So
thank you very much. But thank you.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talk.